we live in an interdependent world. And it's not just the big things like the climate, but the little things as well. In order to be here this morning, I needed a good night's sleep. So I needed simple things like a bed, a sufficient cover, a pillow, and of course the ducks that provided the feathers to go in the pillow. I needed a good breakfast, melon and raspberries as it turned out, but I needed also a knife, or Jerry needed a knife, to cut the melon. I needed, or perhaps I wanted, croissants with honey to give me the strength to actually stand up here. I needed the baker to actually bake the croissants. Okay then. Needed the baker to bake the croissants. I needed Jerry to go to the supermarket to buy them, for that matter. To get here, I needed a car, there being no buses on Saturdays. Steel, rubber, roads. I needed in the past someone to teach me to drive. I need thousands of things and people to physically survive. And yet, there is this feeling around that we are strong and self-reliant. And we should stand on our own two feet, presumably in shoes that we've made for ourselves. That we don't need other people. The whole of our culture teaches us that we are independent and self-sufficient, even when we perfectly well know that there are needs that we can never meet. But God made us with needs. Needs that we can never meet from within ourselves. That's why we pray, give us this day our daily bread. And then there are deeper needs too. Right back at the very beginning, God met the physical needs of Adam and Eve by putting them in a garden, in a warm climate, and providing them with flowing rivers. He met their need for relationship with other created beings by giving them the animals and then each other. He met their need to relate to him, the need that he built into all of us. Our hearts are restless till they find their rest in you. Because we are made in the image of a God who relates. He met that need by walking in the garden in the cool of the day so that they could come and chat over what had happened and be in relationship with him. And of course, when they broke that relationship, they recreated all the needs that had been being met. The physical needs, because they had to leave the garden, but also the needs for restoration of relationship, the needs for forgiveness, healing of the consequences of breaking out of relationship with God made themselves known. And meeting those needs was made even harder by the very fact that their basic problem in breaking relationship was not so much disobedience, that was the consequence, but because they'd set themselves up as being independent of God. The serpent was very cunning. You will be like gods. Not actually gods, because then they might have had the power to meet their own needs, but like gods, able to make their own decisions and stand alone. So as well as our created needs, the needs that we have because we are physical beings, the practical needs to physically survive, we also need the relationships that God made us for. And we also have those now other needs of restoration and healing. So we do have needs. So how do we approach asking God and others to meet them? so that we can begin to move back to where we should have been in the first place, experiencing life in all its fullness. Brian, could you put the first one up? Or the second one, actually. Now, I am aware that it's possible that as we work through this, there may be some issues, some needs that come to light in your own hearts and minds that are quite difficult. So do remember that there are folk here, stewards, myself, others, who are here to help and support, because we are all in this together. We all have needs. The first step in having our needs met, next one, is to admit that there's nothing wrong with having needs and to bring them to God. I've already mentioned our daily needs and our deeper needs. We do need to admit that we've got them. Now, Naaman had a need. He had leprosy. Now, that's probably not the disease that we now call leprosy, but there are any number of unpleasant and unsightly skin problems that all cultures are a bit unhappy about. The ones that people do tend to sort of involuntarily almost draw back from, and that have some sort of stigma attached. It happens even now when we've got good treatments for most skin diseases, and how much more in Naaman's time. And it must have been really hard for Naaman, knowing that that first little spot that only he had seen in the mirror was getting bigger, so that he couldn't hide it and had to admit it. But the ongoing need for reassurance. Okay, at the moment, my importance to the king outweighs any problems with the disease. But what about tomorrow and the next day? What happens if, when it gets worse? It can be amazing how difficult it is to admit a need. Jerry will tell you that there have been times when we've been out on a walk and ended up not quite where we expected. And I will do almost anything rather than check the map, let alone ask anybody for help. And on a slightly more serious note, the rates of early diagnosis of cancer are lower in Lincolnshire than elsewhere in the country. And that's not just because of delays in the hospital system or because you've got a lousy lot of GPs, because I have to say you haven't, but because there is deeply embedded in Lincolnshire culture a deep sense of stoicism. It's only a scratch when your head's hanging off. But there are deeper reasons for not being very willing to admit to our needs. Whatever those needs are, whether it's for physical help, for help with being lost, but also our need for advice, for friendship, for financial help, for our emotional and spiritual health, which can be even more difficult than asking for help for a purely physical problem. And we're thinking about the nature of those blocks a little bit later on. When we have admitted our needs, as Naaman and the 10 men with leprosy did, there's the next step. We need to ask for help. Now, the official Christian answer is pray, which is, of course, absolutely the correct box to tick. But let's face it, it's unusual, though not totally unknown, for God to give us a direct answer to our needs. Nearly always, he answers our prayer through other indirect means, through other people, through our gifts. Someone somewhere is praying for their needs to be met. These gifts may well be part of the answer. I'm not talking here about praying to God for the overall change in the world, I think. Though even there, that need is likely to come through us and others. It's more like the man who was struggling to understand the IKEA instructions for assembling flat-pack furniture. And being a devout man, he fell on his knees and spent hours in prayer asking for God to tell him how to do it. Until God, hearing his prayer, as he always does, actually said, "Have you thought of looking on YouTube?" That was the answer. He needed to ask YouTube to answer that particular need, because that was in the way God was going to answer the need. God does supply all our needs, but he very often does it through others, through individuals, through systems, through information sources, including, of course, his word. Though even then, we may need help in understanding it and seeing how it works for us. And again, we are so often reluctant to ask because there are blocks. And again, we'll think about those in a moment. Now, Naaman actually had done pretty well. He'd admitted his need. It had got to the point where he couldn't do anything but that. And he'd asked for help. He'd asked for help probably in all sorts of directions. The Bible doesn't say, but I am absolutely sure that he'd tried all the over-the-counter remedies, gone to his GP, but what do they know about dermatology, even seen a specialist at Damascus General Hospital. No help. And it may have been that he'd pretty well given up asking. And then an answer, or the beginnings of an answer, does emerge. Through his wife's servant maid, a foreigner, a slave struck servant, a girl, young, what would she know? And it's all credit to Naaman that he was willing to listen to someone so insignificant. Do we actively look for help? Are we ready to look for help in places that we wouldn't normally look for them? And are we prepared for God to point us in unexpected directions for help with our needs? Are we even willing to listen to those we think probably wouldn't have a clue? People whose life experience, whose knowledge, even whose beliefs don't necessarily match ours, because they're from a different culture, different gender, different age group, different whatever. I have a need at the moment, as most of us do most of the time, for courage at the right time to face difficult decisions. It's a need I've almost not hardly begun to articulate, but I do need it. Actually, God moved in to begin to answer some of that need through a quote from an American admiral on a Radio 4 comedy programme, who the admiral said, it was a quote on the programme, "Ships are safe in harbour, but that's not what they were made for." Now, that's not the total answer to our need for courage, but it's a beginning. I had my ears open, and suddenly, yes, that need begins to be met. And of course, we keep on praying and listening for God, especially as we read his word. We need to ask for help. Naaman asked for help. The 10 men with leprosy asked for help. But what blocks us, next slide, Brian, about asking for that help? Because after all, it sounds so easy. Admit you've got a need, ask for help, and then, of course, act on the answer. Why is the admitting and the asking so hard? I think there are several reasons, often mixed in together. The first is, and probably the most fundamental, is that we are caught in the same trap that Adam and Eve ended up in, believing that as humans, they should be able to stand alone. And we live, of course, in a culture that really encourages it. Perhaps it's a little bit better than when most of us were younger. Stiff upper lips seem to be a bit less common than they were. And big boys are sometimes allowed to cry. But if you think of all the books on self-realization, on self-help, on mindfulness, the courses, the gym sessions, you can do it. You can be true to yourself. You're worth it. All of them backing up that big lie that the serpent made right back in the garden. You will be like gods. Autonomous, self-sufficient. And it is not easy for a god to admit they need help, even to themselves, never mind others. We bury our heads in the sands of our own pride. And then there's fear. Sometimes it's fear that the answer to our needs will be one we don't want, because we know very well that our need has been created by things that we're doing wrong. King Ahab, later in Kings, needed to know whether he would go, in Kings, needed to know whether he should go to war. His tame prophets all said, fine, go ahead. But his ally wanted to know if there was a prophet of the Lord, to which Ahab said, yes, but I hate him because he never prophesies anything good about me, but always bad. So I didn't ask. Sometimes our fear is much more justifiable. The fear that the answer to our need will itself cause problems, even pain, not just to us, but to other people. I'm afraid that this pain might mean I have cancer, but I daren't ask for help because I couldn't cope if it was, and my sister is so ill that she couldn't bear it, and it's not fair to burden her. Sometimes it's a fear of change, even when we know it's change for the better, because most of us are much more comfortable with what we know, even when what we know is uncomfortable. And sometimes it's because we're afraid there isn't an answer, and are afraid that finding that there isn't an answer will mean that there is no one and nothing, not even God, who can help, so we daren't ask. And then there's shame. Nice people don't get diseases like this. I've got so involved in gambling, how can I admit to the financial mess I'm in? Or even worse, how can I admit to being abused as a child? I'm so ashamed, even though I know it wasn't my fault. Shame is a very powerful block to asking for help or even admitting it. And then there's guilt, which may or may not be real guilt. I know I shouldn't have had that big meal 3 months ago. The stomach pain I've had ever since is my fault. Therefore, I don't deserve it. I feel so guilty about overeating. I know I'm depressed, but I did make that mistake in my business that ended up in people losing their jobs, and I can't forgive myself. I deserve to feel like this. I don't deserve help. And that mixes into the lack of proper self-worth. I didn't want to bother anyone. Other people have got much bigger things to worry about, and the doctor's so busy. I don't deserve help. I'm just a whatever. I'm not worth it. I don't deserve it. Sometimes it is a lack of faith and trust. I've tried everything and it hasn't worked, so why bother? I've prayed about it and nothing happened, so it can never happen. You tell me to go and bathe in Jordan, see the priest. How can I know it will work? And perhaps the commonest reason of all for not asking for help, simple embarrassment, which is very much part of our culture. Linked to shame, but more, what will other people think of me asking for help on a simple thing like that that they've obviously all got sorted out? Now, it's fairly easy to see how these things are blocks to seeking help for those who don't know Jesus. But we're deceiving ourselves if we think that some of that doesn't sometimes affect us. Even though we know that we have Jesus and can bring everything to him, and we know that he knows us right through and wants to heal and forgive. Two hymn quotes come to mind. Be of sin the double cure, free me from its guilt and its power. Because fear and shame and guilt and embarrassment and self-doubt are all part of the power of sin. We know about the cross freeing us from the legal, if you like, guilt of sin. But we also need to know that it frees us from the power of sin, the power of pride and shame and guilt feelings, and its capacity to erode trust in ourselves as God's beloved new creation, who now stand in his love. And the other quote is, O wind of God, come bend us, break us, till humbly we confess, admit to our need. And we do have God's Spirit within us to bend us and break us, to break down those blocks, those barriers, till we do admit our need and ask for help and accept it. And he will then answer our prayer. Then in your tenderness remake us, revive, renew life, restore, for this we plead. So, admitting need, asking for help with need, the blocks that stop us, and then accepting help, accepting the answers to our prayers, to our questions. After his diversion, that was the bit that was missed out of the reading, after his diversion via the court of Samaria, which so frightened the king of Israel, though it must have been somewhat reassuring to Naaman to know that his own boss valued him at somewhere between 3.1 and 73 million pounds, that was the amount of money he sent with Naaman, depending on how you work it out, Naaman arrives at Elisha's house. And he gets a shock, because Naaman had preconceptions of what the answer to the need, the help he would get, would be like. It wasn't so much that the answer involved bathing, because healing rituals at the time could involve repeated dips in the river. It wasn't even, perhaps, that it was the Jordan, a small muddy trickle compared to the rivers of Damascus, and a river to which to get to, he'd have had to retrace much of his journey down from the north. What really got him was that Elisha didn't even deign to come out of his house, and certainly wasn't going to come down to the Jordan with him, and say the magic words and do the magic gestures while Naaman did the dipping. That, thought Naaman, was how you get healed. You need a sufficiently powerful magician to say the right words in the right circumstances while I go through the right ritual. Without that, I might as well have stayed at home and bathed in my own rivers for all the good it would have done. How many times have we refused help because it doesn't come in the form we expected? Because we would all like to think there is a simple answer for every problem, a pill for every ill, swallow and solve. Press the right buttons and it all goes away. What we don't like to admit is that the answer to our needs might involve us having to do more than we expected. Now, in my role working with the clinical commissioning group now, I hear stories of overweight patients with arthritis in their knees. And that is a real need because, as those of you who've had knee arthritis will know, it's very painful. And they come with an expectation that their GP will refer them straight away for a new knee. And they are not happy when they learn that first they need to see a physio to help them walk better and more, and that they need to lose weight, because without those, the knee replacement is not likely to actually do all that much good. They're even less likely to know that they've got to put the effort in to do those things, and then may end up not needing a knee replacement at all, at least for a time. They came with the preconception of what the answer was, and it turns out to be somewhat different. Now, sometimes, of course, we do respond well to the suggested answer. Those 10 men with leprosy didn't mind that Jesus hadn't laid hands on them. He just told them, still with their leprosy, their skin disease, just to go and see the priest, and they were healed on the way. And they responded well, unlike Naaman, who took a little bit of persuading. That's great. They were healed. But Naaman, like so often so like us, had to come to realise that he had to be involved and that the answer wasn't quite what he expected. We have one more need, even after we've admitted and asked and received and accepted help. Because when our need has been met, what then? And this is a need that's a really good need, that doesn't need to have any blocks about it at all. Thou that has given so much to me, give one thing more, a thankful heart. So often we're like children with the present. What do you say to your kind uncle, aunt, who's given you this lovely present? We need to say thank you. Sometimes we forget to say thank you because we take the meeting of our needs for granted, even as a right. So many of the day-to-day needs we see almost as rights. Which is perhaps why the general confession, the general thanksgiving says, "We bless thee for our creation, preservation, and all the blessings of this life." And sometimes, like the 9 men who didn't come back, we're so taken up with the answer and the joy that it gives us that we simply forget. And that may be a special risk for those of us who are say we're close to God. Because we get so used to his blessings that the grace, the glory of the grace that gave them, was somewhat worn off. And it needed the double outsider, the Samaritan, excluded from the mainstream anyway, but doubly an outsider because of his skin disease. He needed to see again the glory of grace to be truly thankful. The other thing is, of course, that thankfulness and praise is itself a means of gaining more grace and growth. Naaman came back to say thank you. Again, it was a long journey. It meant going back south again instead of straight home to tell his family that he'd been cured. And as a result, he ended up with more than skin deep healing. He ended up in a relationship with God. Elisha turned down the offering of money, which he wanted, quite naturally, to give. And he realised that really he couldn't repay God except by accepting God as his God. That's why he asked for the earth. So he could take the ground home and have it there at home as a reminder that now he stood, kneeled in the place of God. I love the way that, like George Herbert in the quote, he asks for something to help him to be truly thankful, a piece of the land where he'd met God to be a daily focus in his life. God has promised to meet all our needs. He longs for us to admit our needs, to ask for help, to accept it when he offers it, however that route of the help comes. He also longs for us to be thankful. Wherefore I cry and cry again, and in no quiet canst thou, God, be, till I a thankful heart obtain of thee. Not thankful when it pleaseth me, as if thy blessings had spare days, but such a heart whose pulse may be thy praise. Let's sing together 248, I Heard the Voice of Jesus Say.